We're continuing on in our study in the book of Mark, and we'll be in chapter 1, verses 29 to 39. If you're following along on a pew Bible, it's on page 836 onto 837. So we'll be taking a look at that in just a moment. As we begin, I just want us to think for a moment about expectations. Have you realized how much expectations are a part of life? One of the things that I find fascinating is I'm amazed how many expectations I have that I don't realize I have until they go unmet. That's kind of the nature of them. And I'm not saying that any of these are unmet expectations in my life, but here's a list of some things. Expectations about our future, expectations about relationships, how clean our house should be, how long things should take. The list could go on and on. You probably have an expectation this morning of how long and how engaging this sermon should be. You may not be aware of it, but if I fail to measure up to those things, you'll become aware of it. And I may even see it on your faces, but I'll love hopes all things. I'll think it's something else at the time. But if we have that many expectations about all these things in life, can you imagine the level of expectation as Jesus came onto the scene as the God-man, the Messiah, in his day? And today we're going to see how right from the very start of his ministry, the people's expectations, the people's plans for Jesus were different from what he came to do. And as we see this, I think it'll be helpful for us as we consider our own expectations, in particular of the Christian life, in relation to how we expect to see Jesus at work in our lives as we live as believers. So this morning, the outline is very simple. We're going to see how this text shows us that Jesus came to heal, and then we'll also see how Jesus came to do more than heal. And so first of all, we'll notice how Jesus came to heal and how that's depicted in these events early on in his ministry. Notice with me Mark chapter 1, starting in verse 29. And immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. And now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever. And immediately they told him about her. And he came and he took her by the hand and lifted her up. And the fever left her. And she began to serve them. So let's look at this first incident. And just as we do, we can keep in mind what we heard last week was that Jesus has just shown his authority over a demon in the synagogue on the Sabbath. And here, the events of that day are just continuing. We notice that it's after the Sabbath service that they then come immediately to the house where Simon and Andrew lived. Simon also, who will later be called Peter. And this may have served as a base for Jesus' northern ministry. He may have been living there with Peter and Andrew and others. But what we notice right away is that Simon Peter's mother-in-law was ill with a fever. And just kind of a side note to throw out there, the text in Scripture does indicate for us that Peter was married. Some traditions hold to the fact that he never was, but it's recorded for us in the Gospels, and then Paul also mentions it in 1 Corinthians 9. So just something to be aware of as we see how clear Scripture makes that truth. But the point here is not about whether or not Peter was married. The point here is that his mother-in-law, his wife's mother, was ill with a fever. Now, when we hear fever, you may not think of that as a very big deal. If I think of the last probably 10 years in our household with young children, fevers have been a rather regular part of life. And when we think of fevers, we think of it as a symptom of something else going on. Your body is fighting some sort of sickness and it's manifesting itself in terms of a fever. So often you'll take some sort of fever reducer and you just wait it out and everything's fine afterwards. In Jesus' day, fever, and this term that's used here for fever, was probably describing something much closer to malaria. And so it's a much more debilitating illness that's being captured in these words. Luke speaks of it as a high fever. Luke's a doctor making sure we know, hey, this isn't just your low grade. This is a significant physical problem that's taking place with Peter's mother-in-law. And these fevers would often leave one bedridden during it, and they often could be fatal. And in John chapter 4, there's this official, you remember, who reaches out to Jesus because his son is about to die. And he comes to Jesus, and Jesus speaks a word of healing regarding the son. And the report that comes to the official is, your son has been healed. The fever has left him. And so we see the intensity of what's taking place. For us, a fever is usually thought of in very clinical medical terms, but for them, healing a fever like this would require a miracle. God would have to intervene, or else the end would probably be death. And so this is a major problem, a hopeless situation that Jesus is immediately thrust into as he comes home from casting out a demon that morning. And so this news is presented to Jesus. Notice verse 30, immediately they told him about her. And notice how quickly Jesus deals with the situation. Verse 31, and he came, and he took her by the hand, and he lifted her up. And the fever left her. It was gone. And then there's this phrase there, and she began to serve them. What a fascinating detail to include. And I think there's two reasons that that detail is included. One is that it shows us how completely she was healed, how completely she was restored. After a fever breaks, are you ready to just get back at it? I know with little kids, they kind of go into this like snuggly phase where, hey, the fever's over, but they just want to cuddle and are kind of sleepy. I just know for me, I'm wiped out. And I can't believe how much that took out of me. Here, Jesus picks her up by the hand and she's up and at it, ready to serve them. Complete physical healing that took place. So that's the first reason I think that detail is significant. Secondly, Jesus' healing is a restoration to service. He was enabling her to do what she had been created to do, the joyful service and in response. Some come to a passage like this and they find it demeaning. It's just kind of this patriarchal society, and Jesus maybe was just hungry, and so he thought, boy, the only way I'm going to get a sandwich is if I take care of this problem. So he heals her for the sake of getting a sandwich. I don't think that's how we're to read this text here. Instead, this word that she got up and began to serve him, it's the same word that's used of the angels who were ministering to Jesus earlier in chapter 1 as he's in the wilderness. We as creatures have been created to serve the living God. And when Jesus, the God-man, comes onto the scene, part of what he is showing is in his restoration, he restores us to that which we were created to do, joyful service of the living God, which is expressed in service to Jesus Christ and then also to others. And a fascinating component of how the Gospels unfold is that the women often get this, and the men are much slower to get it. The women understand that part of what happens when God is at work and his authority is shown is joyful service. Instead, the men think of God showing up as authoritarian and power. And it's this dynamic that we'll talk about more as the gospel unfolds. But here it's important for us to see that Jesus' healing brings complete and immediate restoration to joyful service on the part of Peter's mother-in-law. So Jesus, if we think about how this day is unfolding, he's cast a demon out of a man while he was at church. Now he's come home and he's healed a woman with a fever, but the day isn't over. Notice verse 32. His ministry continues at sundown. That evening at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or oppressed by demons. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases. And he cast out many demons. He would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. Notice right away in verse 32, Mark makes it very clear that the sun had set. He says it rather redundantly. That evening, what does evening mean? The sun is going down. But that evening at sundown, why is he making this so clear? Because what day is it still? It's the Sabbath day. And Sabbath is measured from sunset to sunset. And so until the sun set, it was still the Sabbath. And according to the traditions of the elders, according to the traditions of the religious leaders, seeking healing was not allowed on the Sabbath. Why wasn't it allowed? Well, because if you were going out to seek healing, you may accidentally end up working and trying to get to the place where the healing would occur. And so to be safe, we'll just avoid seeking healing on the Sabbath. It speaks to the darkness of the world in which Jesus entered, where the religious leaders could do nothing about the actual condition of the people they were supposed to be serving, but instead they heap rules on to keep them from breaking this tradition that was supposed to safeguard them from breaking the law. And so this is interesting. So some would say healing's not even allowed on the Sabbath. And if we think about it, Jesus has already healed on the Sabbath. Peter's mother-in-law, he just raised her up. And this is going to come to a head in chapter 3 as Jesus takes on the religious leaders concerning this very issue. But what's happening here is if you wait until sundown, then you can go seek healing. And that's what the people do. And so they come as soon as the sun is setting and it's okay to do so. They show up at the door where Jesus was staying. And here Mark highlights Jesus' widespread popularity. The people come out in droves to see Jesus. Verse 33, and the whole city was gathered together at the door. Mark uses the normal convention of how we speak to talk about Jesus' popularity. It's pretty sure that it's impossible that the entire city was gathered there outside this one house, especially with the spacing of the houses that have been unearthed in Capernaum. But the point that he is making is there are a lot of people there. And so Mark isn't giving us an error here in Scripture. He's using the conventions of his day to describe Jesus' popularity. Much like we could say everyone was at Marcia's retirement fellowship meal last Sunday. And I'm sure not everyone was literally there. But it's showing his popularity. And notice how quickly word had spread. Jesus had just cast out a demon that morning. And as the sun goes down, the whole town shows up to see what he was going to do. It shows us how stunning. We can read through the Gospels and think, oh, Jesus is there. Of course he's healing people and driving out demons. What do you expect? This reminds us of how striking it is that the Messiah has showed up, the God-man has come to earth, and something very different is now taking place. And so Mark also, he shows us Jesus' widespread popularity, but notice how he shows Jesus' authority in this section. Look at verse 34. He healed many who were sick